So throughout the series, some of the fun things we're doing, like Alyssa said, we're doing this at every age level, which I'm so excited about. So if you get here early, we will show you first thing, the video that your kids are watching back in BC NAS Kids, but this is just to create further conversations and connections. So that way when you get in the car and you ask your five-year-old, what'd you learn at church? And they say nothing, you can go, no, I actually know exactly what you learned about. And so you can talk about that. And a thing that I'm really excited about, we figured out Matt, our fantastic production director, soon to be Fairborn campus pastor in the near future. Yes, that's the right response to that. Found this technology that lets us go live from the different parts of our building to give you a glimpse of what is happening. And so that's what Sheila and Lisa were doing earlier out in the lobby. And there is nothing like watching that live video in our lobby and then watching your eight-year-old wander through the lobby because no one dropped her off at class. It's just a great feeling. Yep, that's Maddie. Awesome. Fantastic. So that's all coming up this series. If you have a Bible with you, we are going to be in Genesis chapter 25. Genesis 25. Over the next 7 weeks, starting today, we are going to be looking at the life of Jacob and Jacob's pursuit of meaning and significance and belonging. And I believe every single one of us at the core of our being, that is what our pursuit is. And it may manifest itself as different things in our lives, different hobbies, different interests, different desires. But at the core of our being, what we are really looking for more than anything else is we are looking for belonging. We are looking for significance. We are looking for meaning. So today I am going to kind of give you an overview of Jacob's life to show you what we're going to hit on in the upcoming weeks and an important piece today. But today, in addition to the overview, I want to focus on one thing that if you're not aware of, could cause you to leave behind the most important parts of your personality. And I think there is a tendency for us over time to leave pieces of ourselves, to leave pieces of our personality, and to leave pieces of our passion behind. And as we get older and as we mature, there are some things that we are called to take hold of and some things that we are called to let go of. We are called to take hold of new habits, of new passions, of new loves. We are called to let go of resentment. We are called to let go of things that entangle us. And yet I think within that, in that same vein, there is a tendency at times that we let go of things that we were meant to hold on to. And I want to show you how that's true in Jacob's life, but more importantly, I want to show you how that is true in your life. And maybe by the time we're done today, that it wouldn't just be that your confidence in God that has increased, but it would be your confidence in yourself that has increased within there. So the title of the message as we start out today is Don't Diminish. Would you turn to someone around you and say, don't diminish. Don't water down my tea. That's what we're saying within there. No, that's not exactly it. Hey, I'm gonna need your help throughout this whole series. Can I count on your help as we go throughout this? Man, I just gotta tell you, some people don't have, it's wrong to have, a favorite child, but I do, but you don't just say that, and so, I'm not supposed to, as a pastor, have a favorite service, but there you go. This is good. More of that. All right, Genesis chapter 25, starting in verse 19, it says this: This is the account. I am not trying out a new raspy voice just for show. I've had a cold for days, okay? This is the account of the family of Isaac, the son of Abraham. When Isaac was 40 years old, he married Rebekah, the daughter of Bethuel, the Aramean, from Padan Aram, and the sister of Laban, the Aramean. Years ago, when I was a pastor, I would spend careful time and go to meticulous detail to make sure that I was pronouncing all the names and cities correctly. And then I realized 95% of you have no idea what the correct pronunciation is. And so now I just make it up because I don't really care that much. So those could all be incorrect. I really don't care. Verse 21, Isaac pleaded with the Lord on behalf of his wife because she was unable to have children. The Lord answered Isaac's prayer, and Rebekah became pregnant with twins. But the two children struggled with each other in her womb, so she went to ask the Lord about it. Why is this happening to me, important note, look at this flow. He asks God for something. God shows up and delivers. And now they've got a whole host of new problems. Just because God is present doesn't mean your problems are removed. And I think sometimes we often think that. We think that if I'm going to have an encounter with God, then everything is going to be perfectly fine. No, that's not the case. Just because God is present or just because God answers doesn't mean that your problems are removed. So why is this happening to me, she asked. And the Lord told her, the sons in your womb will become two nations. From the very beginning, the two nations will be rivals. One nation will be stronger than the other. And your older son will serve your younger son. And when the time came to give birth, Rebecca discovered that she did indeed have twins. The first one was very red at birth and covered with thick hair, like a fur coat. Gross. quick note, sorry. So before my wife and I started having kids, and now we've stopped having kids, which is so much better. But before we started having kids, we had this conversation because everyone thinks their kid is beautiful. Like, everyone thinks their baby is just like, and they'll be like, oh, you should be on posters. You should be on commercials. Like, oh my gosh, this baby, it's like the Gerber baby. It's the cutest baby. And not all babies are like that, right? And so we had this conversation back and forth of like, hey, we know when other people's kids are ugly. Will we know if our babies are ugly? Like, will we be, I'm not gonna tell you the conclusion to that because that'll get me in trouble, but that was fun. So Esau, they named him Esau. Here's an interesting thing. Very red at birth, covered with thick hair like a fur coat. So they named him Esau. We lose this. So they speak Hebrew at the time, okay? So they're speaking the Hebrew language. The word in Hebrew for hairy sounded just like Esau, okay? And I'm gonna go through all the Hebrew words because you don't care about that. But it would be the equivalent today, like if you had a kid that was really hairy and you named him Rary. Like, it would be the exact same thing. Like, why'd you name him Rary? Look at him. I get it, Hairy Rary, there we go. So then the next one. Then the other twin was born with his hand grasping Esau's heel. So they named him Jacob. Jacob sounds just like the Hebrew word for heel grabber. So I go, this is how he came out, grasping his heel. And so we're going to name him Jacob because that sounds just like heel grabber. Isaac was 60 years old when the twins were born. And this is one of those passages, I know there's some Sunday mornings when I read a passage that you know exactly where it's going and you're like, oh, we're gonna talk about that. Oh, that's what we're gonna focus on. And today we're gonna talk about the fact that Esau means hairy and Jacob means heel grabber. And I'm really not kidding about that. And you go, why would we do that? What difference does that make? And I'm not going to attempt to rename some of you Harry, okay? That's not what we're looking for. We're not gonna try to rename you Esau within there. I've seen some of you men with your shirts off and it would fit, but that's not the point of the message. Today, I want to focus in on Jacob. You go, well, what does the fact that Jacob is named heel grabber have anything to do with us? And Jacob is named heel grabber. Other definitions for this are supplanter. That is who Jacob is. He is the supplanter. And this one initial act of grasping on to his brother's heel as he is being born actually becomes the definition for his life. You don't want to be the heel grabber. Like, if you're the heel grabber, it means you are behind. It means you are chasing. It is not someone who is, as the writer in Hebrews says, running the race set before him. It is the person who is attempting to run someone else's race because they seem to be having a nice life. Like, the heel grabber is the person who bases their value on what everyone else thinks of them. The supplanter is the person who bases their significance on their Instagram followers or their Facebook friends or the number of likes they received on their awesome picture of their salad that they ate that day at lunch. That is what it is. And instead of doing what you've been called to do, instead of discovering what you have been set out to do, and instead of living that life to the absolute best of your abilities, it is the person who is always chasing. It's the person who is always behind. And so the one characteristic of Jacob that describes him more than anything else is actually his ambition. It's his ambition. And this is one of those things that it may seem a little odd, because we're starting this series today, Come Matter Here, talking about ambition. And for most of us, we would think this. We would think that the message of Come Matter Here is about contentment. Like, Come Matter Here is finding like acceptance and comfort and meaning and belonging in exactly where you are right now in what you have. It's not about wanting. It's not about desiring something else. It's about being comfortable where you are in this moment and feeling the significance of the moment that you are in. But that's not Jacob. Jacob is ambitious to the core. And this defines Jacob at his best, and it also defines him when he is at his worst. And I bring this up right at the beginning for this reason. Is while Jacob's ambition defines his life, that is often something that we can view as a negative thing. And this might be the tendency within your life. Is you may feel the pressure to diminish what God has put in you. You may feel the pressure to reduce or to downsize or to downgrade the exact gifting and strengths and personality that God has put in you. And the reality is this, is we talk about this idea of ambition. Ambition itself is not a bad thing. And too much of it may be a bad thing, but we don't say something is bad just because it's bad in excess, right? Like when I was a kid, my parents every day, they gave me a Flintstone vitamin, and they were delicious. They were, oh, so fantastic. And so every day I got a Flintstone vitamin, and one day they left the jar opened. And I thought, if one vitamin is healthy, then 50 vitamins are real healthy. And so I ate every last Flintstone vitamin. And so my parents found out. They bought me medicine that made me throw up. And that was the most colorful toilet bowl I have ever seen in my entire life. It was like a mosaic of purples and reds and oranges and yellows. It was absolutely beautiful. But in that moment, I didn't go like, oh, I need to be done with this forever just because in excess it was bad. And my concern within this, and the thing that I've seen over time, is I see people within their personality, within their gifting, within their ability, called to diminish the exact same thing that God has put within them. And so here's the way. When I was in school, I got in trouble all the time. Like, I can't even begin to describe, not serious trouble, just annoying kid in class trouble. And this is what I got in trouble for more than anything else as I look back through grade school. I got in trouble for not working on the work that I was supposed to and for making jokes about what the teacher said, okay? I want you to look at this. My job now is to work on the work slightly ahead of what our team is working on so they can run into that, and to do this. I get paid to do the thing that I got in trouble for my entire life. And if I would have heard that and accepted that, I would have reduced things within my gifting that were never meant to be reduced. I look at my kids like this, and my kids, they're all so unique in their gifting. Like, they all have just such like different abilities compared to each other. And one of my daughters, she is a planner through and through and through. It is amazing how much she wants everything scheduled out. And it's like every single thing we do, it's like the... So she asked me this morning, she was here at church at 7:30, and she's like, what are we doing today? I was like, well, we have church, and then I have a meeting, we have a lunch after church, and then I have a meeting later that night, and she goes, that's it? I was like, well, that feels like a lot. to me. I mean, I guess it's not for you, but it feels like a lot to me. And we'll get in the car and we'll go somewhere. And she'll be like, where are we going? We're going here. How long will it take for us to get there? 20 minutes. And so she'll watch the clock. And as soon as it hits 20 minutes, she's like, it's been 20 minutes and we're not there yet. And please don't call CPS on me. Like that wasn't me. That was the Holy Spirit. Let's keep going. I should just pray now and end because that's the sermon high point, everybody. So come back. And so as we're going along, and she says that, like, it's been 20 minutes, and there's like everything within me at times wants to take her and to put my hand over her mouth and to never let go so she can never ask another question again for the rest of her life. Like, that's what I really want to do. But then I have to remember this. Like, no, that same thing that is annoying in this moment is her gifting. Like, that same thing that is aggravating in this period of time is her unique ability. One of my other daughters, she is the most competitive person I have ever met in my entire life. And I know me, so that's really saying something. And she is, and like every single thing we do, we can't just ever walk up the steps in my house. That's what I want. I want us to just be able to walk up the steps without it being a race, without shoving someone into the handrail, without quite literally grabbing someone's heel. That is the definition of heel grabber, so that you can get in front of them. And there's this part of it that they go, that's too much. You need to cut it out. You need to quit. And then I have to remember, no, that's her gifting. Like, that's what she's been created to do. And I think what has happened is as we grow older and as we became adults, we became the most appealing version possible for the people around us. And instead of becoming the person who we were created to be, the unique person that we were created to be, the gifted, the passionate person that we were created to be, it's almost as if we took a poll of all those around us and tried to select the most appealing version possible. Like, what can I do that will not ruffle feathers? How can I be that I'm not going to annoy people? Like, what can I do in my life that is not going to turn people off or make people think the wrong thing about me? And I want you to see within this the part of you that is aggravating, the part of you that is at times annoying, the part of you that is maybe a little bit neurotic, is also the source of your gifting. It's also the source of your ability. And if you take a poll of the world and reduce those parts of your personality, what you are doing is you're not just changing for them, but you are diminishing what God has put within you. And I don't want that for you. Do you want that for you? I don't want that for you. And so throughout this series, what we're going to be doing is I want to flesh out for you what it looks like to find the here that matters, what it looks like to find significance and meaning and belonging. And we're going to put together 7 statements. And so today's statement feels like a little bit like it's out in right field because we're talking about ambition today. But this is what I want you to see today about the here that matters. That is this, that the here is not where ambition is reduced, but it's where ambition is redeemed. The here that matters, finding significance, finding meaning, finding belonging, is not about reducing your ambition. It's not about reducing your desire. It is certainly not about reducing your passion, but it's about channeling it in such a way that it can be used. It's about directing it to a purpose that is bigger than yourself. It's about directing it to something that truly matters, that God can use. It's not about changing your personality. It's about shifting your purpose in your life. And as we track through Jacob over the next couple weeks, we're going to hear these crazy things that happen in his life. Like one of the things that happens is he steals basically what would be the equivalent of a modern day inheritance from his brother. He gets his brother to sell his inheritance to him because he is starving to death. And so his brother like runs in from the field all hairy and sweaty, I'm sure, because this is gross. His brother just runs in from the field and he's like, give me some soup, I'm starving to death. And Jacob goes, first sell me your inheritance. Which is like, if you think about it, it's really like bargaining with someone who's on fire. Like, right? Like if someone said like, I'm on fire. Well, they wouldn't have to say they're on fire. You would see that they're on fire. Hopefully we're not that dense. I'm on fire. Oh yeah, you are, good job. But if someone was on fire and you were like, first give me your car. Like, that's cold. Like, that's harsh. And so Esau comes in and he goes, I'm starving to death. And Jacob goes, first sell me your inheritance. And he does. And that's Jacob's ambition at his worst. Jacob's ambition at its best is able to work 14 years for a woman that he loved. What we're going to see in just a little bit, I'm just going to touch on this for a second. Jacob's ambition at its best actually leads him to wrestle, or based upon your background, wrestle with God himself, which is, feels like one of the weirdest things. But it defines him because he didn't diminish it. He didn't push it aside. And I think this is what happens, okay? And let me, please speak clearly on this. I think what happens is when we feel like we don't belong, when we feel like we are uncomfortable in our own skin, like we don't fit in the body that we're inhabiting, I think what happens is we don't begin to just tell ourselves a story that if I'm going to matter, I need to go somewhere else, which is a temptation, is it not? To go, maybe if I was in that place, that city, that stage of life, that job, that thing, or that relationship, then I would matter. We don't just tell ourselves that if I could go somewhere else, I would matter, but we begin to tell ourselves if I could become someone else, then I would matter. And we begin looking it around and we start going, well, they seem happy. What are they doing? Maybe I'll just do that. They seem happy. Their Instagram feed is filled with pictures of them smiling. They must be happy. Maybe that's the life I'll live. And before too long, we're heel grabbing. Before too long, we're running everyone else's race instead of our own. And this is what I want you to hear. Like, the thing for Jacob that at times causes him heartache is the thing within him that leads him to greatness. The thing for Jacob that is at times annoying is the thing that causes him to move forward in a way that only God could have moved through him, not when he was trying to be someone else. God can't move through you if you're trying to live someone else's life. And so we ask all the time, we go, God, I want you to move in my life. I want you to do something. You're not even in your life. And so you have to firmly be in the life that you have been given in order for God to move in that moment, because God can't move in your life if you're living their life. And so the thing that defines him, the thing that he struggles with, is actually the thing that God uses more than anything else. And so I want you to not just diminish what God has put in you, but I want you to learn how to direct it. I want you to learn how to use it and how to move it to something that truly matters. So we go, so how do we take that? How do we take our gifting? How do we take our ambition and direct it to something that matters? Because that's not easy, right? Like, that's not the easiest thing in the world. I look at my daughters, and some of them have the gift of just, like, causing enthusiasm. And sometimes they use their powers for evil. And sometimes it causes destruction and heartache and chaos. And so you have the same ability. Like, some of you have the ability of communication. And you can let messages spread like crazy. And part of my question is there, are you using your powers for evil or for good? Are you using your powers to spread gossip or messages of hope? Some of you are trendsetters and you have passion and enthusiasm. And my curiosity within that is that passion and enthusiasm, is that being exhibited in this place or only when you're in the stands of a sports arena? Are you using the desires that God has given you? Are you using them to, are they being redeemed or are they being used for something else? And so how do you direct it? You don't want to diminish it. How do you direct what God has put within you? And I want you to have what Jacob ends up having. And that is that Jacob has an encounter with God. And I want to tell you this, there is no substitute in your life for having an encounter with God. There is no substitute for that. And some of you, you need to go to counseling. And that wasn't just like a sermon illustration, that was a very serious statement. Like, say, I talked to you a lot. Some of you, you need to go to counseling. Not with me, because I'm a terrible counselor. Like, you need to go to counseling, and you should do that. But that is no substitute for having an encounter with God. Some of you, you need to get to work. Like, you need some stuff to do, and you're spending too much time in your life daydreaming and thinking about different things, and you need to actually do something. And so you need to do that. But that's no substitute for an encounter with God. And I am not arrogant enough to think that the only place that you can have an encounter with God is in church on a Sunday morning. I'm a little arrogant, okay? But I'm not that arrogant to think that. I think you can have an encounter with God 1,000 different ways, but I think there is something unique that happens here. I think there is something special that happens here. I was having a conversation yesterday with two ladies who are going through really hard times in their life, and they both said that. The one said, she goes, every Sunday morning, I'm a blubbering mess. And the other one goes, oh, me too. Well, you guys can just sit together. Like, that'll make it convenient for you. But there's something about that when we gather together that is powerful. Even if you don't know everyone around you, I hope you get to learn everyone around you. That's why we keep making you greet the people around you so many times in a row, much to your dismay at times. But that's what Jacob finds out. And so I'm not going to give this whole thing away because we're going to get to this later in the series and we're going to look at it in a little bit. But Jacob wrestles with God. Jacob himself has a wrestling match with God. And you go, what? Like, I'm sure when you think of an encounter with God, you weren't thinking wrestling match, right? Like, you were thinking like maybe special prayer time, worship, lyrics stuck out to you. You weren't thinking wrestling. I don't know of many guys who go, I'm looking for Jesus, I'm gonna go wrestle some people. If you do, you fall into that category of who needs counseling, just to be clear within there. And it is interesting, as you look through commentators, a lot of them say, because it describes him as a man and as God, this man that Jacob wrestles with, it describes him as a man and as God, and they go, it wasn't God, it has to be a man. And the reason why they say is because Jacob wins the wrestling match. It couldn't be God because Jacob wins the wrestling match, and there is no way that Jacob is beating God in a wrestling match. And I understand that sentiment. But here's the thing that I think is interesting. Is I wrestle my kids all the time. Like, all the time I wrestle my kids. And sometimes I let them win. And when I let them win, it usually involves them laying on top of me and then I fall asleep and take a nap. So I kind of win too at the same time. So I'm pretty pleased by that. But sometimes I let them win. And there's a piece of that. And you go, how would Jacob beat God in a wrestling match? And I understand it entirely. Because when I wrestle my kids, I'm enjoying the time with them. Like, I like to see like cultivating that passion in them. Seeing how ambitious they are, seeing how much effort they can give, at times curbing the violence. Like, we wrestle, we don't punch in the face. Off limits for the wrestling, we don't do that right now. And so, like, going through all those different things, it would not be helpful for my children if, when they came up wrestling me, if I flipped them over, piled drive them to the ground, and then walked away. Like, that would be the end of the wrestling. And so here's the piece within there is, when I wrestle my kids, even when they beat me, even when they pin me, I win the relationship. Like, and that's the point, is that the relationship is stronger there. If I crush them, if I body slam them, that's the end of that. And the similar thing is true with us and God. Is sometimes, you ready for this? Sometimes God lets you win. Because his ultimate concern is the relationship. And we've got this weird phrase that floats through our marriages or our other relationships, and like, we'll have arguments and disagreements and we'll be like, yeah, I lost the battle, but I'm gonna win the war. If you win the war, everyone loses. Like, that's not what you're looking for. Like, you can lose the battle and win the relationship because the relationship is the point. And some of moving through that, man, as I look at my kids, I go, man, I just want to be there. I just want to be present. And some of it I have to curb. Like, some of it is a teaching time. My 4-year-old Molly, she makes me concerned because every single time we wrestle, she takes her shirt off. And like, when she's 4, that's cool. In a couple years, it's not going to be cool. And so we're going to have to make sure that doesn't happen. But it's that time together. And so Jacob has this wrestling match with God. And again, we're going to look later on in this series at this whole passage and look at something else that comes out of it. But I want to show you what happens at the end of this in verse 28. It says this. The man says to him, it says, your name will no longer be Jacob. Your name will no longer be heel grabber. It will no longer be supplanter. Your name will no longer be Jacob. The man told him, from now on, you will be called Israel because you have fought with God and with men and have won. This is, I'm changing your name. And while Jacob means heel grabber, Israel is a much, much different name. Well, while his previous name had been defining his running someone else's race, his attempting to supplant someone else, his desire, his ambition to be like everyone else was, now he's named Israel, which means may God prevail. And so look at this. He loses the wrestling match, and his name is changed to may God prevail. And God in this moment doesn't change his personality, but he changes his purpose. He doesn't change his gifting or his ability or the way in which he was wired, but all of a sudden he directs it to a new purpose. And the same ambition that drove Jacob earlier in his life to consume and to accomplish and to conquer is now the ambition that is going to make God's name great in the world that he lived in. And I think what happens at times, when I was growing up, we sang this song in church, and the song was this: anytime there was like a moment of salvation, we would talk about how you need to surrender. That's what you need to do. You need to surrender your life, which I understand that phrase. I don't love that phrase, because the idea that we give when we say surrender is that somehow when I accept God, there's less of me instead of more of me, which is what actually takes place, because now I have me and I have Christ in me at the same time. But the song that we sang, it said this, it says, I surrender all. And I get the meaning behind it. And I understand that it is impossible to rhyme the phrase, I surrender my control and my ego while still taking hold of my personality and my unique gifting and the strengths and abilities that God has given me. I get that. The rhyming scheme on that is a nightmare. And so all just flows a lot better. But you're not called to surrender who you are. You're not called to surrender who you made, because God made you that way. And when he made you, he said it was good. And so the piece of me that wants more than anything else for you is I want you to know that if you have left part of yourself behind, it's time to bring it back. Like if there is a piece of your personality that you have left somewhere in your past, do not diminish it. Direct it to a new place. That when we have a greater confidence in God, it should lead to a greater confidence in ourselves. We should be the most secure people there are in the world. We should be the people who, when other people criticize us, we can deal with it thoughtfully without having a crisis of identity. Because I know God made me. Like no one else made me, God made me, and he is going to use this for good. I invite you, if you would you please stand to your feet right now in this moment. Earlier, we sang these lyrics. We sang, I know a breakthrough is coming. I know a breakthrough is coming. And my hope and my prayer and my desire for every single one of you is that would be true for you as we navigate over this series, as we navigate over these 7 weeks. Are you gonna come back? Has this first week been enough? Are you gonna come back? And my hope for every single one of us is as you move forward, you would move forward with confidence that you would know you were created exactly how God intended to create you. And while you should be thoughtful, while you should be prayerful about the path that he has for you, that you would never diminish, that you would never diminish who God has created you to be. I tell my wife this. Sometimes she will say something negative about herself, and I will look at her and I will say, don't you talk about my wife like that. And this is what I want you to hear. She's right there. Okay, that was awkward. It's usually better when she's anonymous in the crowd. This is what I want you to hear. The monologue that's been going on in your head that tells you you're not enough, that tells you you can't handle it, that tells you you are overmatched for the responsibilities, that tells you what is behind you is greater than what is before you. I tell you, God says, don't you talk about my son like that. Don't you talk about my daughter like that, because a breakthrough is coming ahead. A breakthrough is coming before us. Let's celebrate this together. Sing as loud as you can. I know a breakthrough is coming.